September 17, 2010, the Norris Group returns with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate 2010. The Norris Group has assembled an incredible lineup of industry experts to discuss the state of REO from the inside, including regulatory intervention and aftermath, bulk buying myths and facts, and the opportunities emerging for eager real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for the Cure. This event would not be possible without generous help from the following platinum partners: The Business Press, Foreclosure Radar, and Sean O'Toole, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Claudia Buys Houses, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for iSurvive2010.com, MVT Productions, who always provide our audiovisual needs, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvive2010.com for details.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Joseph Magziarez. Joseph has been an active member of the Appraisal Institute for 38 years. He has served in a variety of capacities at all levels of the organization, including Vice President in 2009. Joseph's also approved as an Appraisal Institute instructor for 26 courses in the Appraisal Institute's Qualifying Education, Continuing Education, and Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practices curriculums. He's also taught in many countries, including China. And in 2010, Mr. Magziarez is President-elect and will become President January 1st, 2011. Joseph, welcome to our show.
Yes, thank you, Bruce.
How has it been for the appraisal business in the last year?
Well, certainly depends on what part of the country you're in, but many appraisers have been having a rather difficult time, and certainly with the real estate market still in the slumps here, it makes it difficult at best for people to do business.
With the Appraisal Institute, how many appraisers are members of that, and how has that membership been affected as far as the numbers over the last year or so?
Currently, we have just shy of 26,000 members. We've been growing, although the growth rate this year is a little less than it has in the last two, but we've had about 4,000 2 years ago, about 3,500 last year, and about half of that so far this year. So we're a little behind on growth, but people are still choosing the Appraisal Institute, probably because we're the independent voice of real estate appraisers.
What services does the Appraisal Institute provide for appraisers? When you say independent voice, go ahead and explain that a little bit.
Yeah, we speak out often and boldly on a lot of topics that affect appraisers. Most recently, we were involved with Representative Kanjorski from Pennsylvania for the last 7 or 8 years working on the Financial Regulatory Reform Consumer Protection Act, which was signed into law by President Obama about a month ago. It's known as H.R. 4173. That's probably been the dominant thing that we've accomplished most recently for appraisers.
When you talk about the length of time that it takes to pass something, I mean, that's an awfully long period of time. And when you think about when we started that journey, let's say 4173 then was maybe initiated in something like 04, there's a lot of things that happened between 04 and 2010 that could have certainly affected the legislation. So, and also the participants, you're going to be president in 2011. So that went through a lot of hands before it finally got passed. So I guess the question is that one of the most difficult things that you'll be dealing with as the president of this institute, is dealing with the legislation that's pending or that maybe has passed and perhaps maybe not as well thought out as you would have liked?
Well, yes, it is, because often, even though this 4173 has passed, it'll take probably another several months or so for the rules and regulations to be written and then to get in some level where they can be enforced. We're also addressing other issues with the Internal Revenue Service. They have some new rules that came out affecting appraisers that are involved in charitable donations where they involve real property. And there's some penalties that are proposed and in those rulings. And we're seeking to clarify those and make them fair for all parties.
In May of 2009, HVCC passed, Home Valuation Code of Conduct. Was the Appraisal Institute basically for the concept of what it tried to accomplish?
Yes, we were in basically the concept that we were in favor of. We had been lobbying for many years for appraiser independence. In other words, to take the pressure off appraisers to go to certain values or to do certain things in appraisal. And often the newer people are inexperienced, could be influenced, as well as some others, to do some things that were inappropriate or be taken off an approved list. So we were in favor on that concept, but we always have the unintended consequences that were a result of that legislation.
What were the intended consequences? The intended consequence was to just to have a very independent appraiser being able to be left alone without influence.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's the main gist that we were in favor of.
And what ended up with, what were some of the unintended consequences that happened because of HVCC?
Well, I think the major one was a proliferation of people that use appraisals, that engage appraisers, moving to appraisal management companies. Several of the larger lenders have large ownership interest in management companies. And there's just been hundreds, if not thousands, of these small management companies that sprang up on the misconception that the bank or a lender had to use them. It's not a fact, but it's the perception, and that's what happened.
Well, when the perception takes over, it almost becomes a fact. So would you say there's a pretty high percentage of appraisals that are now going through an AMC and therefore probably getting a fee reduction for the appraiser?
Yes, that is a fact, that any time you put a middle person in between two, the ultimate cost to the consumer goes up significantly. The producer, just like the farmer, always gets the lower end of the fee. It drives the independent farmers out of business, and it's driven the good appraisers out of the appraisal business because they cannot work and maintain the cost of their data sources in professional associations based on fees that were reduced, in some cases, 50% or more.
I've actually been surprised by your original statement that you've had membership grow, but I don't know that that's because there's been more appraisers in the business. It's just that you probably have been seen as a much needed organization trying to protect the people that are in the business.
It's the information we have, the surveys we're doing, you're exactly right. It's that when people perceive that they have problems, they tend to go where there's alliance, where there's people working for them. And being the independent voice since our inception in the 30s, people do come here and they choose to join us. And they know that we work very hard. We have the largest expense for our lobbyists, and we're the only organization really that has full-time staff in Washington, D.C., and lobbyists.
In dealing with Congress, that process to me would seem pretty frustrating. Are you going to be personally in front of Congress probably in 2011?
I think there's no doubt that the Appraisal Institute will be speaking before Congress in 2011. There's still a lot of items on the table and things to be done. And so we will remain active, and we will certainly be felt. Our presence will be there in Washington, D.C.
Are the Congress people in general well versed enough to understand the ramifications of most of the things they pass, or they really rely on people that work with them to kind of tell them what's what?
Well, they certainly rely on their staff to get information. Several of the Congress people are very knowledgeable of what appraisals are. And, of course, President Ameren and President Sellers have both appeared and before Congress and given statements and positions. And I'm sure that we'll do this next year. Unfortunately, appraisers aren't high on the list. Being only about 100,000 or so in the whole country, we're not a large group, but we're a very important part of the American economy.
Now, we just talked about HVCC, but it's actually coming to an end.
That's correct, but I don't anticipate that's going to have a lot of banks or lenders change their business model quickly. In other words, moving away from management companies. There is a significant part of 4173 that may eliminate some of the management companies because of the customary and reasonable fee clause that's in the 4173.
So 4173 returns the more normal fee structure back to the appraiser. So for an appraisal management company to exist, then that would be an additional fee on top of the normal appraisal fee?
Well, that's how it probably would have to work out, because they said that the customary and reasonable fee would be based on fees paid where in a management company is not involved with the appraiser. So that would probably take them back to pre-management company time. So that fee would be fairly reasonable for someone to be able to be a professional, spend sufficient time, and the other services provided by a management company would have to be put on top of that and borne by the lender. And if they choose to do that and outsource that, that may result in a higher cost to consumers. So consumer pricing may be a factor in reducing the demand for management companies, but we don't have any factual data on that yet.
No, it's too early. Who actually owns these AMCs, and what are the requirements to own one?
Well, the requirements, as I understand, are not significant. I don't have the various laws because they're just coming under regulation now. So basically, a lot of people could spring up and have these management companies. So they were fairly well unregulated until 4173 passed here, which is starting the regulation. We've lobbied very hard with a lot of states, and we have bills in 19 states that have adopted our model legislation for management companies to some degree or another, and put those laws in effect where they have to register with the state. We have at least a half a dozen others that are considering adopting the laws now, and I anticipate over the next several years that these companies will come under somebody's purview to take a look at their business operations and to ensure that the consumer is getting treated fairly, regardless if an appraisal is ordered from a lender or through a management company. And not all management companies are bad. There are certainly some very, very good ones that pay full fees to appraisers, but there are many more that sort of make the living off the appraiser's back.
I would imagine that would have really eliminated, now maybe, I don't know, it must have reduced the quality of the appraiser, the base of the appraisers that were willing to work under the AMCs. That would seem to make sense to me.
Well, that's correct. And having been in the business now for about 40 years, I have many friends and fellow appraisers, members of the Institute and other appraisers in California. A lot of those highly qualified people have changed their business model, trying to go into litigation or into general appraising because they're unable to spend the time necessary at the fees that were offered to stay in business. So, unfortunately, a lot of those people have left the business, and that allows people with less training and less experience to come in, and that's not good for the consumer.
No. What is the training now that is required to get an appraisal license, and is it basically a national requirement? It's not just 50 different states now having different rules. Is it one national license?
As of 2008, the Appraisal Foundation enacted new requirements that had to be adopted by all states. And that requires a series of courses and for residential certification, an associate's degree, or I believe it's 21 hours of specific type college courses in addition to 7 or 8 appraisal courses, and then obtaining experience over a several-year period. Usually that experience would be looked at by someone, and then they do have a rigorous test now that is given to be permitted to practice, and so that's a good thing. on the general side, and these would be for commercial type properties, a college degree or 30 some hours are required, and that's also a rigorous testing ability. I think the residential test now is 6 hours allowed, and on the general side, 8 hours. And I understand it's a very difficult test, and it's put there to ensure that people have basic knowledge, and so it's not put there as a barrier to entry, although it is a very rigorous test.
The advanced designations like MAI or SRA, SRPA, are those going to become more important in the future?
Well, we believe they are. We're designating at a faster rate now than we have in the past, although unfortunately in a down market it makes it very difficult for people to go ahead and obtain more education and to move through the process. But people are doing that, and we are coming up with more specialty-type courses and some certification courses for people to hold people out as experts. So we are seeing a move back to quality, and I anticipate over the next year or so we should see a greater move towards people seeking quality rather than quick turnaround times. Once the fees come back up to where they should be, there's no reason not to hire the better person.
How'd the process change? The process where a loan broker gets a loan application, and at that point he may have called his favorite appraiser or somebody that did work for them on a regular basis, and the assumption is there's something wrong with that. But now we go to 2010, when he gets that loan application, what is his phone call? Who is his phone call to now, and how different is the process?
Well, typically, is someone that is selling a property would take that potential borrower to a lender or to a mortgage broker. That mortgage broker now has to have a relationship where they go to a bank or to a lender or to someone that bank delegates to order that arrow. Order the appraisal, and that sort of has similar they would call a Chinese firewall. There's some distance there. In the past, some of the mortgage brokers would obtain two or three or four appraisals till they found one that had what they wanted, and then they would use that one. And now that's more of an independent process that typically the realtor doesn't have a lot of say in which appraiser gets that. But a seller of real estate should still insist that they hire the most qualified person, but they usually can't choose by name.
Okay. So it's random. Now, how do the AMCs choose that appraiser? Are they very specific with somebody's experience in the area or expertise in that type of inventory? How is that selection process usually done?
Well, I can tell you because our firm has had requests from management companies, and many of them are very fee sensitive. In other words, you have to have the lowest fee, promise the fast turnaround time, which may not allow even sufficient time to do a credible opinion of value on a property. So, unfortunately, a lot of them have been stressing turnaround time and a low fee as the basis. Now, that should start turning over now, going back to a reasonable fee, and hopefully they'll start allowing more time. But to hold someone to, for instance, I just seen someone sent me information. They want everything back in 24 hours from the time that they call you and you get an appointment. Well, you don't know what the problem is to get to the property, and to be able to promise something back within 24 hours is pretty unreasonable in my book.
Sure, and it's it guarantees that something's going to be less accurate than it could be, that's for sure. Huh. Is it easy to get scratch off the list of an AMC?
Well, I don't have any specific information of my own on that because I don't really do too much work for any of those. We have one company that I work for because 98% of their appraisers are appraisal institute members and they pay us full fee. I work for that company, but as for others, I don't work for very many.
Okay.
But I understand that if you don't make the turnaround times, then there's strong consideration to getting someone else.
Broker price opinions, very, very common term in the real estate industry. And I just your opinion of those, and do you see when people do short sales, isn't a BPO really the dominant tool of determining value?
Well, unfortunately, it is, and BPOs certainly have their opinion in the broker going out and giving their opinion on what a property should be priced at to effect a sale. But as they're getting in these short sales in other cases, I don't believe that they're a good all the time. Sort of for portfolio management, taking a look at ballparking, something where it might be. But an appraiser is a disinterested third party. A broker involved in that, I've heard of one person that was doing 15 or 20 of these broker price opinions a day, so they can't be doing much more than sending a piece of paper out with some stuff on it, because I don't know how you could analyze anything that quickly. A good broker couldn't price a property, 15 properties in one day. So the main problem with BPOs is they're completely unregulated. They have no oversight, and we have went to Congress, and we have told them they should consider putting oversight over these broker price opinions.
Do you get many assignments to do short sale appraisals?
We do not get very many for short sale sales that I'm aware of. We do some work for Fannie Mae, and they pay a good fee, and they expect us to do a good appraisal, and then to, in some cases, they would like a liquidation sale. Some clients would like a liquidation price as well as a market value price, and there's a big difference there.
I like that term. What now? How different is that appraisal, and how do you determine? Do you have comps? Do you have liquidated comps to where you look at and say, okay, well, that was priced to sell within a certain time frame?
Well, yes, and I can tell you an example. We had just a couple of weeks ago, I got a call back from the company, because typically they might get two appraisals on some of these things on occasion, and the other appraiser, I don't know who that was, but they used short sales and foreclosure sales, and we used market sales that we had in the area, and we were challenged by the lender for our value being too high, and that we should have considered these other sales. And they said, well, fully 70% of the sales were not short sales or foreclosure sales. They were bona fide on the market sales. And that's anytime you have 70% of your sales are bona fide sales, you definitely have to look at that way. Now, we also disclose these other sales, that the short sales are indicating a discount of X percent to X percent. But to value on that basis, to me, is completely improper unless they're looking for a liquidation value.
Correct. I can see that. Yeah, that if they're intending to market it exactly in that time frame that the other sales occurred in, then that makes sense that they'd want to know what that price was.
Yes.
A lot of pressure on appraisers. I've had the license before. I went through the training, and to be a regular appraiser definitely has its pressure, where you have a lot of people asking you to do certain things. And that's the goal, I guess, of everything, is to try and eliminate that pressure from the appraiser and let him just go do his job and come up with the number impeded by other people's opinion or needs. Do you see that the outcome being favorable for the appraisal business?
Well, yes, I think there is a hope for people now with the 4173, because it takes a look at these. It tells AMCs that they're going to have to be regulated, and I believe the appraisal subcommittee will have some input on that, and probably the appraisal foundation might write some rules. But states are writing rules now for these management companies. And it's important that they hire people that are competent. In residential appraising, especially to bring people out of other cities, is not reasonable when you have people within that city. So hopefully, if they get parity in pricing the appraisal product at a customer reasonable fee for professional appraisers, there's no reason to go out of the area, because you can hire someone for less money. And anytime something costs less, generally that means there's going to be less quality or less reliability.
Well, Joseph, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you on our panel on I Survive Real Estate 2010. Thanks again for joining us.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2010. Adrenaline Athletic, Benton Investment Group, Community Reinvest Workshop, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, Entrust California, Everlast Photography, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Keystone CPA, Landwood Title, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Financial Services, Mike Cantu, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Summit Solutions, Tony Alvarez, the REOMentor.com, WealthPoint, and Weston South Coast Plaza. To find out more about I Survived Real Estate 2010, visit isurvived2010.com.